bottle of wine.
Happy birthday to me. Happy.
Stop! You can't sing that! That's copyright infringement!
Well, if I can't have the birthday, then, okay. Now that I'm not needed anymore, digital blood can flow. Welcome to the hacking, chipping, chopping, gore section. Dividends will come. I claim my human right to a digital bonus package. Welcome to Kaput Radio.
You're all I want to know. I feel free.
Hollywood versus the internet.
Infringing websites. Copyright infringing website censorship without the right to due process. You are ruining our world.
But unless you can enforce copyright online,
we will break the chains.
It's now or never.
But perhaps most dangerously, Protect IP will meddle with the inner workings of the net. Experts believe by fiddling with the web's registry of domain names, the result will be less security and less stability. In short, Protect IP won't stop piracy, but it will introduce vast potential for censorship and abuse while making the web less safe and less reliable. This is the internet we're talking about. It's a vital and vibrant medium, and our government is tampering with its basic structure so people will maybe buy more Hollywood movies. But Hollywood movies don't get grassroots candidates elected. They don't overthrow corrupt regimes, and the entire entertainment industry doesn't even contribute that much to our economy. The internet does all these and more.
If everybody had an ocean across the USA.
Greetings, world. The internet you have come to take for granted has once again come under attack. Many interest groups have come together and are currently rallying for the right to remove any website they deem inappropriate. This bill will endanger the free flow of information through domain seizures, ISP blockades, search engine censorship, and restricting funding to accused websites. This bill takes internet censorship to the next level. The internet is a place where people can come together freely to share information and opinions. The freedom that it has provided has served us well and driven intellectual progress. Once information has been put on the internet, it has entered the public domain, and no government has the right to disrupt activities on the internet, no matter how crucial to national security. We must stand up to those who censor the internet. We must protect what is rightfully ours. We must attack in defiance of our homeland. You are anonymous. You are legion. You cannot forget this. You cannot forget this.
Well, that'll be the day when you say goodbye. Yes, that'll be the day when you make me cry. You say you're gonna leave. You know it's a lie, 'cause that'll be the day when I die.
You can have your whole website shut down.
Web users around the world were trapped without service today when a large section of the internet collapsed under the weight of millions of baby pictures which have been posted online. MCI Senior Vice President Vinton Cerfi.
Some personal web pages contain literally hundreds of adorable baby photos. Add to that the number of precious little pumpkins on photo sharing sites like ophoto.com, and anyone can see it was a recipe for disaster.
Cerfi expects regular web traffic flow to resume, however, once the nation's larger internet providers are reinforced with stronger cuteness-bearing servers.
Hollywood versus the internet.
Wang Jiyu can no longer open his computer without opening a world of abuse.
It's now or never.
Copyright infringing websites. Copyright infringing website. We will break the chains. The chains. The chains. The chains. The chains. The chains.
I'm the economy and I have brought along a song about the clusters of you busters who have done me wrong. Mr. Dow, you'd kiss my hand, you'd whisper this was what you planned. Now you decry me and your supply can't buy demand.
It's always the economy which is berated, blamed, whipped up into a frenzy or doused with political mistakes. The economy doesn't obey anymore. She behaves like an unruly child, is disobedient, and has become irrational in many ways. So, I will have a bit of focus on this bizarre creature, the economy. This time, I will mix my observations with some other material intended to keep all bearable again. First up, let me tell you about the Perplexmobile. What is it? What does it do? Why? Where? When? Before the Perplexmobile, we had the Milton Friedman limousine. Before that, we had the Keynesian scooter. Before that, we had, let me have a look back in history. They had a horse cart. Now, in the globalized world, we have the Perplexmobile, and it seems stuck between a rock and a much harder place. And no one understands it. Supposedly, it is a vehicle to move things. But the manual is so obscure that our best experts can't make any sense of how to drive it. No one seems to understand the meanings of elaborate graphs, tables, and computer trading programs. Studying the old manual and running trial and error attempts with the new Perplexmobile are not succeeding. No matter how much they load it, it won't move very much at all. Someone tried to be clever and asked, "Let's check whether the handbrake was locked in," but they couldn't find any brakes at all. Is it even possible that the Perplexmobile, without brakes, doesn't even have any wheels, but is a kind of hovercraft gliding over the ground? Maybe there is not enough air to lift it off the ground, or it's the wrong kind of air, like polluted toxic dead air. Or does it miss a vital part, such a toolbox of common sense questions about gambling and hiring fuel to pay previously unpaid hired fuel with? Or how long can you make other people fuel your life? Well, the Perplexmobile will continue to perplex us into oblivion if we don't start understanding its flaw and begin to dismantle it and reform it to a useful vehicle for us people.
Out to flaunt. Hey fellas, see a blanch of dread across your flash. You were so rash that I am currently in cash. Cause I know I will revive. Maybe slimmer, but no dimmer, cause my glimmer is alive. Watch me rise up from the ash. Surprise, you crash into a smash. You may connive, but I'll revive. I will revive.
Anti-mining tax advertisements will return to television screens this week, according to the Association of Mining and Exploration Companies. The decision came after small and medium-sized miners won the financial backing of a group called Keep Australia Afloat, started by prominent Liberal Party member Bill Mitchell. It's also got the support of a Queensland business
mining
group.
Mining magnate Clive Palmer spoke passionately about restrictions on political donations, about media ownership.
Consider your patriotic and national feelings towards your own country for a moment, and that is Australia. Don't you think that this government has failed you, betrayed you, let you down, and left you behind? Well, there are some of us strong Australians like Clive Palmer and Gina Reinhardt who are determined to put this nation back on the right track with the right policies, rightly into this great nation of white, right people, and let them help you find the right hope, right opportunity, and outright optimism for your life again. Am I right? So, Clive and Gina will change the government of this country to put it right. Clive, Gina, the Superman and Wonder Woman of all Australian things being sweet, alcoholic, and fat. Go, Clive! Go, Gina! Go! The pig race to the gravy train does not wait. So, if you, the badly affected, are fed up with socialist left-wing spin brewed by faceless men ruining your days, consider a necessary change. Let Clive and Gina tell you all about it in their newly acquired print and television media. Watch Clive dishing up irresistible weasel words served on salacious grease. Or see Gina whipping the cream of mining propaganda with the right-minded media stooges. Clive and Gina, they are dinky-die Australians with substantial more bling than average rich people. They have some considerable weight to hit the floor with. But most of all, they are concerned with the direction this government has taken Australia. How dare they tax us? How dare they help the environment and the Aboriginals? Are they selling us all out to the Communist Party in China? Clive and Gina are breathlessly trying to get up from their sofas and use their considerable grit and grease to help Tony Abbott help them getting closer to the gravy train. It could be your train too. Just think of the good old days under John Howard. Comfortable and relaxed days they were indeed. Sponsored by Lies Media, Rare Earth, Life Animal Transport, Yellow Cake, and Fat Pig Iron or China Cake.
Meet Gina Rinehart, Australia's richest person, after her wealth rocketed from $2 to $9 billion last year. The only child of mining magnate Lang Hancock, Gina grew up on a 24 billion ton iron ore deposit in WA, ditched uni after a year of economics and joined the family company. At 21, Gina announced a plan to revolutionise open cut mining by using nuclear explosions. The plan was scrapped, but 20 years later she mused, "It's a pity it didn't happen." Rinehart became famous for her feud with Rose Laxon. Hired to look after her aging father, the Filipino housekeeper married him. When Gina tried to intervene, her father cruelly rebuked her. "Allow me to remember you as the neat, trim, capable, attractive young lady, rather than the slothful, vindictive, and devious baby elephant you have become. I am glad your mother cannot see you now." A few months later, he removed her as a director of Hancock Resources. Lang died in 1992. Rinehart spent 14 years brawling with her stepmother, the remarried Rose Porteous, over the estate. Lang's body was cremated, but with Gina hoping tests would eventually prove Rose killed him, his heart, kidneys, and liver were locked up in Perth Mortuary, where they remain to this day. The coroner found he died of natural causes. After his death, Rinehart took control of the mining empire and successfully expanded it. She remained publicity shy, bulletproofing her cars and office windows, and retaining former SAS men as bodyguards. In 2010, she went public, a multi-billionaire taking to the streets to protest Labor's proposed mining tax. Australians for Northern Development and Economic Vision, the lobby group she founded, includes climate skeptic Ian Plimer and her corporate strategist John McRobert, who used to advise Pauline Hanson. Rinehart also funded British skeptic Lord Monckton's 2010 tour of Australia. In November, she bought stakes in Channel 10 and Fairfax newspapers. Family friend Ron Manners explained that Rinehart would like her voice to be heard. What does that voice sound like? Rinehart published her 7-point plan for Australia in March. It includes cutting taxes on mining, loosening environmental regulations, and bringing in cheap migrant labour from Asia, an act she says would be humanitarian. And she is reportedly behind Channel 10's decision to give Andrew Bolt, Australia's most vocal climate change denier, his own TV show. Gina Rinehart, businesswoman, brawler, and budding media mogul. $9 billion is a lot of money to play with.
From Grandpa's television this week, the Sunday Night Detective movie. Yes, British, BBC. Yes, interesting? No. But there's a novelty with a new actor playing the role of Inspector Barnaby. To me, he looks like David Cameron's old brother, gone senile into bizarre Tory antics. Set in a loopy countryside where the BBC has managed to create a kind of fantasy Britain without any black people at all. Anyway, it's cheap entertainment for white baby boomers and young people born old. However, if one measures the bizarreness of David Cameron's policy announcement for Britain now and extrapolates it to a future version like an older brother of him, well, Britain, it will become quite bizarre indeed for your 2012 Olympics in your deepening recession. People are watching Athens right now and will learn fast. In other places, people reassess the merits of the French guillotine. But that's a kind of French kiss. Let's focus on the whole planet.
Can't see any flying saucers.
New Midsummer Murders returns Sunday, 8:30 on ABC One.
America, shall we talk? No, I don't want to talk about America, but I've got Dan here talking about America.
America, America, here's to your health. America, America.
Now, tell me, why is the country that's the most wealthy also amongst the most unhealthy? There's probably a lot of theories out there, but mine's gotta be the lack of national healthcare. A category of welfare that happens to be welfare, whether there's wealth there or whether it's elsewhere. Now you can probably tell where this is going from my accent, or you're thinking, why is this British guy rapping? I like America, the music, the people. That's why I wanna see improvements for each of them. There's problems here too, Britain's got its fair share. I'm sure you know about our questionable mental care, but there's one thing that stands better than the rest, and that's the NHS, yes. Where nobody faces rejection just because to treat them would be a dangerous investment. Where what the doctor prescribes is what you're given instead of having to wait for your insurer's decision. Where prescriptions are a reasonable price, if you need some it lifelong you can even subscribe. Where if you're old or young, unemployed, then it's free and the price tag becomes null and void. Where you can go home without paying one penny, but you still got the option of a private company. It's unbelievable the stuff they've done for me before. Months in hospital and I've not paid a fee at all. America, America, here's to your health. America, America, here's wishing you good health. Look, boy, insurance firms have about saving dimes before they'll even think about saving lives. So say goodbye to your treatment if there's even a minor loophole in your legal agreement. Is your system victim-free? There's 50 million Americans who evidently disagree. 50 million without health insurance that could die just because they couldn't afford it. You don't have to pay to have a fire extinguished, and you have the police, not private militias. So why should this difference apply to the systems providing for victims requiring assistance? Nothing should be held higher than citizens. Putting wealth over health, I am sick of it. Insurance firms are commercial businesses. They're not concerned what your physical fitness is. They're only interested in what the interest is. Over here we have a different incentive. A lot of you are incensed at this, and I don't intend to be insensitive, but listen, there's several myths about the terrible British medical system that I better dismiss quick. One, you can't choose who the doctor is. Not true. There's a long list of doctors I've gone to. Two, one of the most stupid lies is that old people are euthanized when they're due to die. Not true. If there was institutionalized granny killing, don't you think there'd be a public outcry? You don't have to use the NHS anyway. There's still plenty of private firms if you want to pay, but the proof's in the pudding. Come to Britain for a bit, I bet you can't find anyone who will get rid of it. America, America, here's to your health. America, America, here's wishing you good health. America, America.
Just how far will the economy fall? We asked economic reporter Dan Banks for his assessment.
Are you confused about the economy? Well, have no fear. I'm going to explain the American economy right now.
Yeah, this economy is a biatch, right? You're probably hurting just as bad as I am, right, Flo?
Oh, yeah.
People think that the economy and the recession hits just the middle class, but that ain't true. Superstar rappers like you and me, we're both affected too, right, Flo?
Oh, yeah, most definitely.
Dude, you and me should totally do a song about that.
We need to work something out.
You want to work something out?
For real.
Why don't you check out what I got so far, and then you can just jump in.
I'm going to ad-lib. I'm just going to ad-lib.
Oh, you're going to ad-lib? Yeah. All right, cool. So when people come up to me and say, Mark K., how are you affected by the economy? You know, Flo, I just tell them like this here. Dog, I'm feeling your pain. This economy's insane. Last week I went to Costco for a case of champagne. Times are tight for me too. I just don't know what to do. Had to sell a Lamborghini. Now I've only got two.
The global economy's about to crash. The global economy's about to crash. To crash, to crash. Warrior, come my brother, yes, come outside. Wake up my sister, yes, open your eyes. The financial system is melting down. The time of change is coming now. The global economy is about to crash. The global economy is about to crash. The global economy is about to crash.
You know, before I decided to migrate to this country, I had a good look at the maps of this continent. You will immediately notice the absence of mountains, except for three small areas along the east coast, and even the highest mountain of that is just above 2,000 meters altitude. The rest of the landscapes looks well worn with rounded rocks and shallow undulating topography. So I assume this continent underwent a lot of erosion, actually around 4 billion years of it. Now, since 1877, white settlers came to this country, the first lot storming out into the outback for gold, and anyone like the Aboriginals standing in their path got just massacred during the first wave of chaotic, unplanned settlement. No planning, no foresight, just gung-ho, go, go, go. When some of the gold diggers were flooded in the places where they had built their shacks, they were indeed amazed at the so-called driest continent on Earth. The next wave were the pastoralists, also on the massacre path, and wild anarchic settlement followed. They also got flooded eventually, or burnt out by forest fires. The next idea was to go and dig up coal, iron ore, and other resources in a mad rush. Again, without planning, no foresight for the damage occurring to the environment and the Aboriginal people. And then the wild rush to settle continued unabated to this day. Australia had three floods this summer, and yet people in many regions just rebuilt their damaged homes, roads, bridges, and generally are used to financial handouts from the authorities to repeat the mistake once more and live again in a flood zone. That means they are getting paid to get flooded. Yep, that's Australia. No matter how often you make the same mistake, you must do it again. And, of course, in a mad rush if possible.
Is there an Australian version of Fox News?
No.
This is the thing I've been looking at in the UK. Frankly, whatever you do at street level, which is what you're talking about here, is not going to have much of an impact compared with capturing an entire news media. I mean, you look at the effect that Andrew Boat has had since he was rocketed to fame, and I think without giving away too many secrets, Joanne is going to end up doing quite a bit more on that channel if all goes according to plan. And that is the way to do it. You have to capture the high ground on what are still the major media, and I think will remain so for quite some time. And until we crack that one, both in the UK and in Australia, we're going to suffer from a disadvantage over against the more libertarian-minded, right-thinking people in the United States who have got Fox News and have therefore got things like the Tea Party movement, have therefore, at last, put some lead into the pencil of the Republican Party. And it seems to me that devoting some time and effort to encouraging those we know who are super rich to invest in perhaps even establishing a new satellite TV channel is not an expensive thing. And then get a few Joe Novas and Andrew Bopes to go on and do the commentating every day, but keep the news straight and fair and balanced as they do on Fox. That would break through and give to Australia, as it has to America, a proper dose of free market thinking. You look at Glenn Beck, for instance, who has been explaining how the US Constitution works, which is an essentially libertarian democratic document. You have the business people explaining how a free market concept in business work every day and reaching thousands of millions of people around the world on Fox News. And let's be clear, that's still the way to do it. I would like to suggest a modest free market solution to the problem we've identified this evening, which is that we don't have a TV channel of our own. I would be very happy to work with people like Joe Nova, Andrew Bolt, etc., to put together a business plan for such a thing. If that idea would be generally supported, then we'll see if we can get someone to be an agent. As a matter of interest, just have a straw vote. I'd love to see whether people would be in favour or would abstain or would be against it. Those in favour.
Oh,
all right.
And what I just prepared.
Oh, why not?
Right, yes.
Why not?
Business plan.
Those against
those abstain? I see no abstain.
Unanimous.
That's unanimous. Well, thank you very much.
That's going to be the idea we're going to take away and develop and work on, Ron. Is that a nod?
You know, looking at the new emerging big economies like China, India, Brazil and others, you would see a rush towards materialism or specifically mad consumption of things. This has happened in China's Guangdong province for more than 10 years. They have a rapidly growing middle class with wealthy kids spoiled by materialism. During the late 1950s and early 60s, First world nations such as America and Europe developed in the same way. The middle class with wealth accumulation started and they had spoiled rich kids since. But one thing may be worth remembering, during the later 60s the dropout, let go and tune in phenomenon happened. The anti-consumer was born and it was a global movement of that generation. I'm just wondering whether we will see ninja hippies in Guangdong province dropping out in a predictable counter-movement sometime soon. Or a Brazilian rebel living just off the landfill, not because he has no alternative, as we have become so accustomed to see on third world TV pictures, but because he rejects consumerism and is liberated to choose the landfill over the gated suburb to live in. When Mumbai suddenly finds a movement of, say, 1 million dropouts turning the subcontinental sadhu hippie existence into a new fashion, wow, that could be quite amusing. And ironic, when I look at my local neighborhood here in the forest, considering the intent to leave the shops behind and live some kind of self-delusional rural suburb hybrid, with still considerable landfill supplies relentlessly spreading. But I'm hopeful that the sadhu, hippie and the ninja, Mulbane and maybe the Samba sage all have a really good time when their time comes. Since the two-party Westminster model of parliaments in Australia has been broken largely by non-English Australians voting for third parties and independent candidates, political accidents started to happen. First, Kevin Rudd became Prime Minister after John Howard. He reached a stratospheric approval rating in his first few months of government, but anyone after John Howard would have done so quite easily. Then the nature of power made its mark on Kevin Rudd. He became, let's say, unmanageable and got disposed of in a swift coup-like fashion, alarming the Westminster mold of Australians to the bone. Julia Gillard was put in. She quickly held elections and since then we have anything but a Westminster two-party type of parliament. There are four independent of different ilk and bizarreness. The governing Labour Party has one majority vote in the House of Representatives. And the opposition is spewing dummies right of centre since. They have produced the love child of John Howard and someone else, Mr. Tony Abbott, as the leader, leading them nowhere into a wasteful terrain of obstruction, objection, to the point that the leader, Tony Abbott, has become very silent of late since he got popularised as Dr. No with a feline claw. Less prominent members of this parliament stumble, trip, backslide on a weekly basis. Only parliamentary privilege and generous old pensions promised keep the suicide rate amongst politicians at tolerable levels presently. But it's not just politicians. You always have the political media, the political economists, the advisor staff, party officials, unions, lobbyists of all shades, and surprise visits from important people like Barack Obama visiting his backyard over here, providing for many ways to stumble, fall, trip, or kill your political love in a few seconds of tweets and hacked emails. To my observations, the level of skill for all these players of the two-party Westminster system is inadequate to deal with the reality of a much more challenging world than Westminster ever thought of. So, we will see continued slime grovelling of the lowest kind towards the gravy bowl being sold to the Australian people as politics. I suppose it's not much different in your country, or is it? Ah, this is the end of the show. Thanks for listening. Web details can be found at radio4all.net. That is radio4all.net. And otherwise, as far as the digital reality goes, peep and soap it up your corporate hole. I'm Martin. Catch you all next time.